Well, Quirk just goes on, and then I had the writing problem of how to end this thing, take him through various phases and so forth, and at one point, in a fit of sort of elaborate gloom and also lack of creative juice, I just had him end living happily ever after in an insane asylum where he'd been sent after trying to make a speech in a park and causing a good deal of trouble in courtroom and so forth. And then my friends at that point who read it said, look, I mean, that's just really a cop-out. All really modern books of this kind, which this is partly satirizing, all of these end up with the character in the insane asylum, and they say, oh my, that's existentialism and all that. And that really wasn't what I had in mind, so I tried to figure out some way to end it, and I remembered Tom Terrific. I wondered why, if a man could change himself into anybody, he couldn't really push his art to further limits and change himself into anything. And there's a sense that this is possible, and we open the last chapter then, and we have a possible ending for him with Quirk. We just last saw him in his journal thinking about this possibility. Why couldn't I be a fire hydrant? Why couldn't I be a bicycle? Why couldn't I be anything? And he's gone, and we come to the chapter 15, just a couple of little pieces out of this. Frankly, nobody has a clue what finally became of Jacob Quirk. Or to put it another way, nobody knows what he became, if he became anything. I ought to remind you, as we go into the topical things, that some of this was written a few years ago, and some of these things sound, others don't, but some sound like they came directly out of today's headlines as we go into the front. We still have his crazy journal, of course. That is, we will have it in due time and due course. It is presently reported to be safe in the National Archives, safe and classified, for there seem to be some items in it which concern the national security. Perhaps, why not, at some stage of his earlier career, during the human transformation stage, he could have turned himself into some politician or diplomat. Even, and let us admit this possibility and all the dangers of it, into the President of the United States and or his rivals. It would require only one caper of this kind to cause a great deal of mischief, perhaps on a global scale. And we have to allow for the possibility that such a thing could have happened. And so do our allies, and so do our enemies. There have been many strange turns and counterturns in our political and social life over the past few years. It would be easy to blame Jacob Quirk for all of them. Still, may we not consider that he could have been at least responsible for some of the weirdo, strange-o things that our leaders have been doing? Sooner or later, that journal will be declassified, and then we can satisfy our curiosity. Well, the next move is a little talk about a former psychiatrist. I just mentioned him because we have a moment. There was a missing bed in the hospital where he was for a while, and this psychiatrist, I'll just mention him in passing because my psychiatrist friends didn't think he was funny. Chief psychiatrist is a white-haired, rosy-cheeked, jolly, smiling Santa Claus gent with a cute German accent who never seems to lose his authentic old-world charm or blow his cool, except when somebody is dumb enough or rude enough to bring up the years of the 1940s, which he argues most persuasively never really happened. In his brilliant contribution to revisionist history, The Lost Decade of the 40s, A Study in Mass Hallucination, the chief psychiatrist, Dr. Smartheim, argues that Jacob Quirk, too, was merely an hallucination, an experiment, as it were, carefully devised and perpetrated upon the highly suggestible criminal nuts in his charge. He's got a point. The only people in the asylum who still claim to have seen Jacob Quirk are the patients. The success of the Quirk experiment, as Smartheim calls it, see his report in Modern Lunacy 14, 2, pages 113 to 26, is a preliminary indication, initial evidence of the hypothesis that a great many public figures are only mass hallucinations. Products of the corrupt and decadent mass consciousness of our times. He may be right, too. Jacob Quirk could have told him that way back when he was performing in nightclubs. Anyway, it goes ahead, and you have various problems, such as... Nevertheless, there are some curious incidents, which, though not really directly in any tangible way linked to Jacob Quirk, reality or fiction, are necessary to report and to consider. I mention them here not out of desire to make a case one way or the other, or out of any interest in blatant sensationalism, but chiefly out of deference to a considerable number of people, quirk jerks, as Dr. Smartheim calls them, who seem to believe that Jacob Quirk is for real. Far be it from me to fly in the face of any consensus, even a minority opinion. People point to any number of inexplicable incidents and events as frequent and debatable as the sighting of UFOs in our skies as proof. Indeed, some of the quirk jerks believe Quirk is a UFO, thus solving two problems at once with neatness and dispatch. However, most of the things cited by these obsessed believers in the quirk myth have some logical explanation. A distinguished commission appointed by the president, composed of scientists, judges, shipping magnates, steel tycoons, labor and civil rights leaders, movie stars, preachers, priests, rabbis, and the family and relatives of members of Congress, has been in almost continuous session for some time, sifting the evidence as they prepare a major report which may someday be made public. Their final conclusions and judgment must remain a matter of conjecture until that happy day, but even now, through entirely reliable, though necessarily anonymous sources, it's possible to report on some of their findings. First, practically all of these odd incidents have some satisfactory explanation in no way connected with Jacob Quirk. 99 out of 100 of them, conservatively, may be dismissed out of hand. Such ludicrous and celebrated examples as the dirty talking taxicab of New York City, the obscene neon sign which appeared briefly on the Golden Gate Bridge, the champagne which suddenly filled the pipes of the public water system of Temperance, Iowa, and then was just as suddenly replaced by noxious and sulfurous artesian brew, the Spanish fly which was somehow bottled in the Pepsi-Cola served in those... machines at Vassar College and caused all that unfortunate excitement. The showing in Cherokee, North Carolina of the film The Sound of Music, during which the principals appeared, to the stunned audience at least, completely in the nude and performing lewd and indecent acts. The nationally televised appearance of the New York City Ballet Company, during which millions of viewers claimed to have seen a macabre and grotesque encounter by a group equally divided between cannibals and vegetarian victims. All these and others of their ilk have some kind of explanation and can be discarded here, now, and forever as not having any significance whatsoever. Here's the one little leftover from the Elizabethan thing. In large part, these and other absurdities, the committee report will state, as a quote, are what may be called statistical aberrations. After all, statistically, if millions and millions of monkeys were placed before millions and millions of typewriters, sooner or later, one of them would inevitably type out the complete works of William Shakespeare, which is not to imply that the plays of Shakespeare were written by a monkey. However attractive that thought may be to some, there is irrefutable evidence before this committee that Shakespeare's plays represent a rare collaboration between Francis Bacon and Edward Cook. In any case, though there were a good many monkeys in Elizabethan England, there is no evidence that a sufficient number of them existed for there to be the optimum conditions of statistical probability. Moreover, lacking any real notion of progress or any real desire for technical improvements, those underdeveloped people of that era had not imagined, let alone invented, the typewriter. End quote.